The 13th Sunday in Ordinary Time. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark, chapter 5, verses 21 to 43. When Jesus had crossed in the boat to the other side, a large crowd gathered round him, and he stayed by the lakeside. Then one of the synagogue officials came up, Jairus by name, and seeing him, fell at his feet and pleaded with him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter is desperately sick. Do come and lay your hands on her to make her better and save her life." Jesus went with him, and a large crowd followed him. They were all pressing around him. Now there was a woman who had suffered from a hemorrhage for 12 years. After long and painful treatment under various doctors, she had spent all she had without being any the better. In fact, she was getting worse. She had heard about Jesus, and she came up behind him through the crowd and touched his cloak. "If I can touch even his clothes," she had told herself, "I shall be well again." And the source of the bleeding dried up instantly, and she felt in herself that she was cured of her complaint. Immediately aware that power had gone out from him, Jesus turned round in the crowd and said, "Who touched my clothes?" His disciples said to him, "You see how the crowd is pressing round you, and yet you say, 'Who touched me?'" But he continued to look all around to see who had done it. Then the woman came forward, frightened and trembling, because she knew what had happened to her, and she fell at his feet and told him the whole truth. "My daughter," he said, "your faith has restored you to health. Go in peace and be free from your complaint." While he was still speaking, some people arrived from the house of the synagogue official to say, "Your daughter is dead. Why put the master to any further trouble?" But Jesus had overheard this remark of theirs and said to the official, "Do not be afraid, only have faith." And he allowed no one to go with him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. So they came to the official's house, and Jesus noticed all the commotion, with people weeping and wailing unrestrainedly. He went in and said to them, "Why all this commotion and crying? The child is not dead, but asleep." But they laughed at him. So he turned them all out, and taking with him the child's father and mother, and his own companions, he went into the place where the child lay. And taking the child by the hand, he said to her, "Talitha cum," which means, "Little girl, I tell you to get up." The little girl got up at once and began to walk about, for she was 12 years old. At this they were overcome with astonishment, and he ordered them strictly not to let anyone know about it, and he told them to give her something to eat.
Jesus is walking on a sunny, dusty road that runs along the lake shore. He is making his way towards the village and is surrounded by a large crowd which was certainly waiting for him. The people throng around him, notwithstanding the fact that the apostles push with their arms and shoulders to make way for him and raise their voices to persuade the crowd to make room. But Jesus is not upset by so much confusion. As he is taller by a head than those around him, he looks and smiles kindly at the crowds. He replies to their greetings. He caresses a few boys who succeed in creeping through the hedge of adults to get close to him, and he lays his hand on the heads of babies who are raised by their mothers above those who are nearer Jesus, so that he may touch them. He continues to walk slowly, patiently, in the midst of the shouting and continual pressure that would annoy any other person. A man shouts in a panting voice, "Make way! Make way!" He must be known to many and is obviously the voice of an influential person, because the crowd opens out, albeit with some difficulty, such as the crush, to let a 50-year-old man pass. He is wearing a long loose garment, and around his head he has a kind of white handkerchief, two flaps of which hang down along his cheeks and neck. When he arrives before Jesus, he prostrates himself at his feet and says, "Oh, Master, why have you been away so long? My little girl is so ill. No one can cure her. You alone are her mother's hope and mine. Come, Master, I've been waiting for you with immense anxiety. Please come at once. My only daughter is dying." And he weeps. Jesus lays his hand on the head of the weeping man, who is bent and shaking with sobs, and replies to him, "Do not weep. Have faith. Your daughter will live. Let us go to her. Stand up. Let us go." His final words sound like a command. Before, he was the comforter. Now it is the dominator who is speaking. They set out. Jesus is walking beside the weeping father and is holding him by the hand. And when the poor man is convulsed with deeper sobs, I see Jesus look at him and press his hand harder. He doesn't do anything else, but how much strength must flow into a soul that is dealt with in this way by Jesus. The apostles attempt to hold the people back, but when they grumble too much, or they almost insult the pushing crowds, Jesus looks back and says kindly, "Leave my little ones alone." However, at a certain moment, he turns around with an abrupt movement, letting go the father's hand, and he stops. Not only his head has turned around, but his whole body. He looks taller because he has taken a kingly attitude. With a severe, inquisitive countenance, he scans the crowd. His eyes are flashing, not harshly, but majestically. "Who touched me?" he asks. Nobody replies. "Who touched me? I repeat," insists Jesus. "Master," reply the disciples, "don't you see how the crowds are pressing around you on all sides? They're all touching you, despite our efforts." Jesus, while speaking, looks three or four times at a little woman, about 40 years old, very poorly dressed and emaciated, who endeavours to disappear in the crowds and vanish completely. His eyes must be burning her. She realises that she cannot escape, comes back, and throws herself at his feet, almost touching the dust of the road with her face, while her arms are stretched out, not daring to touch Jesus. "Forgive me, it was I. I was ill, I've been ill for 12 years, shunned by everybody. My husband deserted me, and I spent everything I had so that I might be not considered a disgrace and I might be able to live like everybody else. But no one was able to cure me. See, Master, I'm old before my time. My strength has flown out of me with my incurable hemorrhage, and my peace went with it. They told me that you are good. I was told by one whom you cured of leprosy, and who, having been shunned himself for many years, did not loathe me. I didn't dare tell you before. Forgive me. I thought that if I only touched you, I would be cured. But I didn't make you unclean. I hardly touched the hem of your tunic, or the hem that trails on the ground, on the dirt of the road. I'm dirt myself, but now I am cured. May you be blessed. The moment I touched your tunic, my complaint came to an end. I'm like all other women. I will no longer be avoided by everybody. My husband, my children and relatives, they'll be able to stay with me and I'll be able to caress them. I shall be useful in my house. Thank you, Jesus, my good master. May you be blessed forever. Jesus looks at her with infinite kindness. He smiles and says, "Go in peace, my daughter. Your faith has restored you to health. Be free from your complaint forever. Be good and happy. Go." While he is still speaking, a man arrives. I think he is a servant, and he addresses the father who had been waiting all this time, respectfully but anxiously, as if he were on tenterhooks. "Your daughter is dead," he says. "It is quite useless to bother the master. Her soul departed, and the women are already mourning her. Her mother has sent me to tell you, and she asks you to come home at once." The poor father utters a deep groan. He hides his face in his hands, pressing his forehead and eyes, and bending his head as if he had been struck. And Jesus, who is intent on listening and answering the woman, one must think that he has seen and heard nothing, turns around and laying his hand on the bent shoulders of the poor father, he says, "Man, I told you, have faith. I repeat, have faith. Do not be afraid. Your girl will live. Let us go to her." And he sets out, holding the dejected man close to himself. The crowds, seeing so much grief and being deeply affected by the recent miracle, are frightened and they stop. They then part, allowing Jesus and his disciples to walk fast, and they follow in the wake of the passing grace. They walk like this for about 100 yards, heading towards the centre of the town. People are crammed in front of a respectable house, commenting in loud, shrill voices on the event and replying to louder screams coming from the house through the wide open door. They are piercing screams, apparently uttered monotonously by the shrill voice of a soloist, to whom a group of thin voices replies first and then is followed by another group of full voices. There is enough uproar to cause even healthy people to die. Jesus orders his disciples to stop at the door, and he tells Peter, John, and James to follow him. He enters the house with them, holding the weeping father by the arm all the time. By holding him in this way, he seems to be wishing to instill into him the certainty that he is there to make him happy. When the woman mourners, I would call them howlers, see the landlord and the master, they double their screams. They clap their hands, beat tambourines, and strike triangles to accompany their lamentations. "Be quiet," says Jesus. "There is no need to weep. The girl is not dead. She is sleeping." The women shout louder. Some roll on the floor, some scratch themselves, and some tear their hair, or they pretend to do so, to prove that she is already dead. The musicians and friends of the family shake their heads at Jesus' illusion. They think that he is deceived, but he repeats, "Be silent," so energetically that the turmoil, while not ceasing completely, becomes a whisper. And he passes by. He goes into a little room. A dead girl is lying on a bed. She is thin and very pale. She has already been dressed and her dark hair has been set in order. Her mother is weeping on the right side of the bed, and she kisses the waxen little hand of the dead girl. How handsome Jesus is now! I have seldom seen him like this. He approaches the bed in a concerned manner. He seems to be sliding or flying across the floor, so fast he approaches the little bed. The three apostles stand with their backs to the door, which they have closed in the faces of curious onlookers. The Father is standing at the foot of the bed. Jesus goes to the left-hand side, and with his left hand, he takes the lifeless left hand of the girl. He raises his right arm with open palm to the height of his shoulder, and he then lowers it in the attitude of one who swears or gives an order. He says, "Little girl, I tell you, get up." There is a moment when everybody is in suspense, except Jesus and the girl. The apostles stretch their necks to see better. The father and mother look at their child with eyes full of deep sorrow. After a moment, a sigh raises the breast of the girl. A light hue tinges her waxen face, and its deathly pallor fades away. The hint of a smile appears on her lips, and then her eyes open as if she were having a beautiful dream. Jesus is still holding her hand. She gently opens her eyes and looks around as if she were awakening. She sees first the face of Jesus, who is looking at her with his most beautiful eyes and smiling kindly to encourage her, and she smiles at him. "Get up," repeats Jesus. He pushes aside with his hand the funeral ornaments spread on the bed and around it, flowers, veils, etc., and he helps her to get up and to take her first steps, holding her by the hand. "Give her something to eat, now," he commands. "She is cured. God has given her back to you. Thank him for that. And don't tell anybody what happened. You know what happened to her. You believed, and your faith deserved a miracle. The others did not have faith. It is quite useless to endeavor to convince them. God does not show himself to those who deny a miracle. And you, my little girl, be good. Goodbye. Peace to this house." And he goes out, closing the door behind him. Jesus speaks of the miracles which he performed and which continued with the works of his apostles after Pentecost. He says, "If the shadow of Peter served to heal, what must my shadow have done? Or my breath, or my glance? Remember the woman suffering from bleeding. If I manage to touch the hem of his robe, I shall be healed." And so it was. The power of miracles issued from me continually. I had come to take people to God and to open the dikes of love which had been closed by the day of sin. Centuries of love expanded like waves over the little world of Palestine. They showed all God's love for man, which could finally expand as he desired to redeem men, first with love, rather than blood.